Welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, inviting you to join us for an hour of conversation. First up today, we'll hear about ranked choice voting from the Australian perspective, a system of voting that has been used for more than a century in that country. And beer lovers, take note, Brewfest, one of the marquee events of the Rotary Club of Juno, is back. And so is the Battle of the Burger, a fundraiser for the Thunder Mountain High School swim team. Won't want to miss that. As for the forecast, might as well Xerox it for the next week. Rain through Friday, giving way to partly cloudy skies on Saturday. Rain still in the mix through Monday. Lows tonight in the lower 40s, highs tomorrow in the upper 50s. Juno Afternoon will be right back after National Native News. And gunashish for listening to Juno Afternoon. Thank you for being here with us today. I'm Rhonda McBride. Next year, Alaskans will have a brand new experience at the polls, a chance to try ranked choice voting, where you not only select your favorite candidate, but designate second, third, and fourth choices. Well, a lot of voters are understandably nervous about this. They wonder, how is it going to work? How might it change Alaska politics? Well, here to answer some of these questions, Benjamin Riley, a professor from the University of Western Australia, who is this Friday speaker in the Egan Lecture Series hosted by the University of Alaska Southeast. He's also going to be doing some research here in Juneau. He is en route, and in fact, he is in Hawaii. Oh, you are so lucky. I'm sure it's not raining there.
It's beautiful here, Rhonda. Just beautiful.
So we are so curious. I think everybody wants to know, why is an Australian professor so interested in what's happening here in our state?
Well, it's a good question. I'm a political scientist, so I'm interested in politics. But the real reason is that Australia has used ranked choice voting for 100 years, actually over 100 years. And it's one of the things that's shaped our politics. And it's something that I've written about. I was actually last in Alaska back in the summer of 2002, which was the last time there was a ballot initiative to bring in ranked choice voting then. It was supported by, I think, the Republicans and Libertarians. It failed. I had a great time in Anchorage, and now it's succeeded, and so I'm coming back to do some research, like you say, talk to some of your local politicians, and also give a talk about how ranked choice voting works, because it's something that we're very familiar with in Australia.
Well, we'll talk about the Australian experience in a moment, but I think we're sort of curious about how it's going to work for us this time around. And it's been a while in coming, and ranked choice voting seems to be gaining traction, not just in Alaska, but elsewhere, but it finally came here. Why do you think that is?
Yes, it's becoming more popular. It's being picked up in quite a few places around the world and quite a few places in the United States. Maine's been using the system for a few years. It's been used in a lot of local elections in the West Coast, Minneapolis. Why is it becoming more popular? Well, I think there's a basic problem with the existing electoral system. We call it a plurality system, or first past the post, it's sometimes called, which is that unless there's only two candidates, as soon as there's more than two, but three candidates, you can get very odd results coming out of that system. For example, if there are three candidates and they each get about a third of the vote, then if you get 34% of the vote, you're the winner, even though 66% of people wanted someone else. So I think there's a sense in which a system that guarantees that the winner has an absolute majority, that is over 50%, is a fairer system. So that's one reason. And that's particularly the case if you want to vote for a third party, not one of the big two, under the existing system, the old system, you're going to waste your vote, right? You're going to waste your vote, because you've got to really think about which of the big two parties is going to win, And often people then will say, okay, I won't vote for this third party, even though that's my real choice. I'll have to vote for, you know, one of the Republicans or the Democrats. Whereas under ranked choice voting, you don't have to make that decision. You can vote for your favoured party number one and then give a second or a third ranking to which of the big parties you prefer. So a lot of voters prefer the system because it allows them to be quite sincere in how they show their preferences. And I guess that's the last reason that it's a system that's gaining ground. You know, it asks voters to give more information than just who their first choice is. It says, if you can't have your first choice, what would your second choice be? What would your third choice be? And that's seen as, you know, generally a good thing to get more rather than less information from voters.
A lot of times I think Alaskans wish that maybe their second choice candidate has run as an independent so they can kind of stay with the process, because in Alaska, ever since they went to a closed primary system, the voting is very defined. It tends to skew to one particular type of voter in the Republican Party, the more conservative voter. So I guess in states with small populations like Alaska, a lot of freaky things can happen with the voting. Sometimes you can have people win by one or two votes. I mean, it happens a lot. In fact, there have been ties and they've had to flip a coin to see who wins. In Australia, do they have strange circumstances like that where the votes can be very close?
Yeah, we have those as well. But the difference, again, is that because we use ranked choice voting, whoever ends up being the winner can say, I have an absolute majority of support from the electorate, from the voters. And, you know, politicians have say this to me all the time. It's like, hey, I have more than half the people chose me. So I really am representative. Whereas if you're getting elected on 25% or 30% of the vote, that's much harder to make that claim. And I think Alaska, because there are such high levels of non-aligned voters, you know, most registered voters are not members of the Democrats, the two big parties, Republican or Democrat, that makes it, you know, unusually suitable, I think, for ranked choice voting. So, you know, my sense is, who knows how it's going to work? We'll find out. But my sense is, because Alaska has so many people who do want to vote for someone other than the big two parties, it probably is going to be quite a good system for voters.
So can you sort of recap for people? Go to the voting poll. I am the voter. Tell me what is going to face me as in the ranked choice voting system. What am I going to be dealing with? What am I going to see on the ballot?
Right. Well, I mean, two things to keep in mind. First is that the primary system is changing too. And you're going to have an open primary, what's called a top four primary, first before you get to go to the ranked choice general election. So the first time you go to vote, if you vote in the primaries next year, you won't get to use ranked choice, but you will be voting, able to vote for all parties. It won't just be, you know, you vote as a registered Republican or a registered Democrat or whatever. Then you get to the general election, that's when you use ranked choice voting. What will it look like? It will be a ballot paper that has some columns on it and next to the names of all the candidates, and one column will say first choice, and you fill in the little circle for whoever your first choice is. And then if you have a second choice, you get fill in the column in the little circle for your second choice candidate, and you can go third, fourth. I think there's even going to be a fifth choice for a write-in candidate. So it will be a more complex looking ballot paper. But the basic idea is not complex. It's essentially what we do every day when we go to the supermarket or whatever. If we, you know, if they don't have my favorite brand of salad dressing, that's okay. My second choice will be this brand. And if they're out of both of them, I can have this third choice. I can live with that. That's basically the same system for the election.
You know, it is sometimes hard to get voters to follow instructions. I mean, we see people not able to fill out the circles completely. And I wonder about having to designate a couple of choices if that's going to be a mess.
Yeah, I think the elections office has worked pretty hard on this. I was chatting to them about this the other day. So they're starting to put out some, you know, advertising campaigns and educational material. You don't have to rank anyone. You can vote just exactly the same way as you've always voted. You can just vote for a first choice and leave it at that, and that's totally fine. That won't have any impact on your ballot paper being counted or anything like that. It's really just for those voters who do want to express a second choice or a third choice that it allows them to do it. But the beauty of the system, as it were, is that that information can then be used, if no one has an absolute majority, to work out who is the sort of consensus choice amongst all the people. And sometimes that's going to be a different person to the person who would have won under the old system, under the plurality system. Often it will be the same, but sometimes it's going to be different.
So in Australia, where this has happened for more than 100 years, how did it change the political system? Did it have some impacts?
Oh, yeah, it's had big impacts. It's had two big things, I think. Firstly, it had quite a strong partisan impact. In other words, it's favoured different parties, but it's favoured different ones over time. So when it was first introduced, it very much favoured the conservative parties, the right-wing parties. And that was the case for about 50 years. They really liked ranked choice voting. And then about 1980s, 1990s, you start to get green parties and other parties that would, you know, you'd think of more as more left-wing parties coming around. So now it tends to help more the left side of politics because there's more parties competing there. And it gets away from this vote-splitting problem. So that's one way that it's changed Australian politics. But I think the really important way it's changed our politics, and that, you know, this may have some relevance for Alaska, is that it's made politics much more centrist, and in some ways it's made politics rather boring because you cannot get elected as an extremist. You just can't. You have to be somewhere in the sort of middle of the road because the electoral system is trying to find that consensus candidate. So to the extent that, you know, you want to have a more kind of middle of the road politics, this is a good system. If you want excitement, not so much, because, you know, it's hard for a really out there candidate to get elected in Australia.
Well, my sense of it is that Alaskans will go for excitement over middle of the road anytime they can. I don't know why that is, but when thinking back on some of our elections, and perhaps maybe one case in point might be when Lisa Murkowski was upset in the Republican primary by Joe Miller. And he was very much a conservative candidate. And people said, oh, my goodness, she probably would have won in the general. And then she ran as a write-in candidate and had a historic victory. So I guess it proves that perhaps voters are more to the middle of the road than we may think, even in Alaska. Do you think that Lisa Murkowski, who is running again with ranked choice voting, would avoid having to run a write-in if she lost in the primary?
Yeah, I think it will help candidates like Murkowski for two reasons. One, because there is now going to be this top four primary, you know, there might be two Republicans come through the primary and get on the ballot for the general election. So it's not just going to be, you know, one Republican. There might be multiple Republicans, and she will probably be one of those multiple Republicans, right? And then the second way it's probably going to help Murkowski, and I've actually seen some polling that suggests this, is that she is, because she is a moderate Republican, will probably pick up some second preferences from the other side of the political aisle, from voters who might want to support a Democrat or someone else, but don't mind Murkowski. So they'll give her a number two vote or a number three vote, and those votes can flow back and be very helpful. So I think it will help Murkowski. I think it will probably help in the governor's race, a candidate like former Governor Walker, who I believe is going to be running again, for the same reason, that they'll probably get enough number two votes from the supporters of other candidates to help them be viable in that race.
It's interesting, though, that Senator Lisa Murkowski's opponent, Kelly Schiavacca, has been endorsed by Republican leaders as their choice. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes down in the primary. But basically, as I'm understanding you, there is always going to be a second or possibly third choice voter emerging out of a party's primary.
Yeah, so no, the system now, and this is separate to ranked choice voting, Rhonda, completely separate, but the change that went through last year, there are no party primaries anymore. It's what's called an open primary. So all parties compete at the same time, and then the top four vote getters, whoever they may be, go through to the general election. And the thinking there is precisely, I think, to stop or get around this problem where, say, Murkowski, who would probably win in a general election, can't get through a Republican primary. Because now, in an open primary, they've got a much better chance. So I think that was the thinking that probably the Murkowski situation was probably one of the things in the minds of the people who brought this in. But, of course, it will help any candidate who has a broad base of support and is, you know, doesn't appall people more, you know, lots of people, isn't necessarily everyone's first choice, but that everyone can live with. That's the sort of candidate who tends to get advantaged by this new system.
Well, I remember when Republicans a couple decades ago fought to close the primary, because what would happen is sometimes Democrats would cross over and vote for Republican candidates to improve. You know, they would vote sometimes for the candidate, the Republican candidate that they thought had the best chance of losing, so that they would face off against a Democrat that was more stronger. So the Republicans really questioned the motives of Democrats who crossed over. I don't know if that's actually true or if that's actually what happened, but they felt that the primary was necessary to preserve the party's choice, its platform. And what you're telling me is it sounds like parties are dead in the primary. They're a non-entity.
Well, they're an entity, but they won't be able to dictate things. They're not closed anymore, and really, there is no single party primary anymore. That's gone. You don't just have a primary where Republicans just get to choose their candidate. You get a primary where everyone gets to vote, and the top four candidates go through to the general election. And so that's going to be quite a change. And yes, you're right. I have heard these stories about primaries too, where open primaries where they try and get, you know, a weaker candidate from the other side up. But again, that's going to be history, I think, now, because now they've got to focus on getting one or two, maybe even three in some areas of their party, candidates from their party going through to the general election. So yeah, it's going to be a big change.
Well, I don't think it's going to end the entertainment we have in Alaska every election season, because they always say that politics is Alaska's favorite sport. And I truly do believe that. But in Australia, did this ranked choice voting kind of eliminate the duality, the yin and the yang of political parties? Because in our country, we are so divided that it's hard to get anything done in Alaska in the legislature. The divisions are so sharp. You're always having the parties butt up against each other rather than work with each other. So does ranked choice voting lead to better cooperation between parties? Now, what happened to the parties? I know you mentioned that the Republicans or the more conservative party in Australia flourished for a while and then it sort of switched. But are parties less significant?
Yeah. Yeah, no. We in some ways it's kind of similar to Alaska. So no, we still have two main parties. It's a two-party system, but they are much closer together. So there's a lot more middle ground where they essentially there's bipartisanship. There's agreement. We still have a very what's called an adversarial political system. The candidates still yell at each other and say unkind things, but not to the same extent as has happened in the United States, to be honest. It's more centrist. That's why I said it was kind of boring, because you don't have the whole the entertainment value that you have in Alaska and some other parts of the United States. But it's probably better at just getting things done, because there's a lot more bipartisanship in the parliament. So they'll come together on a whole range of issues, the two main parties, and work, essentially together.
So what about?
And they're not as polarized.
What about how districts are carved up? In Alaska, we're going through that 10-year process of creating districts and what we call reapportioning the vote based on population. And typically, there's all kinds of shenanigans in that year to set up districts so that candidates from a certain party are suddenly or incumbents from a certain party are canceled out. And that's how they, how one party will that's in charge at that particular time in history will maneuver. So, how does ranked choice voting affect that? I mean, do you have reapportionment in Australia? Something similar?
Well, yeah, we sure do. But I tell you, there is a big difference, Rhonda, and this is actually a big difference between the United States and most of the rest of the world, including Australia. We don't let the politicians do the reapportioning. And it's really only America that allows the elected politicians to draw the lines on the map, because, of course, then they're going to try and draw it to benefit themselves. In Australia, we have an independent commission that draws the lines based on population movements and geographical features, and the politicians don't get to do it. That independent redistricting model is starting to catch on in the United States as well, but that's separate to ranked choice voting. So that might be the next mountain to climb for reformists.
Well, in all fairness, there are a mix of parties represented and different branches of government represented on that panel. But typically, the party of the governor who is serving at that time has a bit of a house advantage in that. But before we go, I did want to ask you about how ranked choice voting affects the minority vote. And specifically in Alaska, our Alaska Native vote can be fairly strong. And if they are all unified, can sway elections given the small population. Because voter turnout in villages in rural Alaska tends to be pretty high. So if they all band together, 500 votes can sway an Alaska election. So what about in Australia? Do you see that with Indigenous peoples? What is their political clout?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. The guys I was just talking to who ran the reform campaign last year in Alaska told me that some of their highest support for change came from areas with large numbers of Indigenous voters, which was interesting, because one of the critiques that's made of the system, and I have heard it made in Alaska and it's made in Australia too, is that this system disadvantages minorities because it's complex and it makes the ballot paper potentially confusing. And then, of course, the comeback to that is always like, well, what are you saying? I mean, if Australians can manage it, the Irish can manage it, there are all these people around the world can manage it, why Alaskans can't manage it? I don't think so. In Australia, it's part of the furniture so much that we don't even think about rankings. When I say to people, I'm going to America, looking at their electoral system, they don't have rankings. They don't have rankings? Oh, that's so unfair. So I think for minorities, you know, the ability, again, to maybe be someone's second choice or third choice, even if they're not, you know, the first choice, it can be helpful. There's a little bit of research from the Bay Area in California that suggests that minorities have done a bit better in terms of getting elected, and women have definitely done better since ranked choice voting came in. So I don't know if that will play out the same way in Alaska.
Well, I guess...
You tell me, Ron. You tell me.
You know, I have learned not to make any predictions about anything because Alaskan voters can be surprising. And yeah. I think it's just because it's a state that's so huge, so diverse, and the population is so scattered that, you know, even polling is not really very effective here compared to other places because people are so scattered and so diverse. But I really want to thank you, Professor Benjamin Riley from the University of Western Australia, for joining us. And you can watch his lecture over Zoom this Friday night at 7. And you can find the full lineup of speakers in the Egan Lecture Series on the UAS website, uas.alaska.edu/Egan Lecture. And you do have to register, but it doesn't cost you anything. And also they post the videos of the lectures afterwards. So thank you so much. And before we go, any parting thoughts?
Oh, look, I would just say, you know, good luck. You don't get to use this system till next year, but a lot of people in the rest of America and people like me around the world are actually watching with great interest to see how this works out. So, you know, good luck with it. But, you know, it could be that Alaska becomes a bit of a standard bearer for others who are wanting to make this reform. We'll see.
Oh, Alaska, the guinea pig of the American political system. We're a work in progress. Thank you so much for joining us, Benjamin Riley.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Thank you, everyone, for being here. I'm Rhonda McBride. 20 different brewing companies and distributors, craft beers in bottles and on tap. I'm going to be telling you about a beer lover's dream and an opportunity for the Rotary Club of Juneau to raise money for a number of their community causes. And joining us from the Rotary's Brewfest committee, we have Andy Mills, who is the Brewfest chair, and Ann Metcalf, who is a club administrator chair for the Rotary Club, as well as a Brewfest committee member. So I want to thank you both for joining us here today. Last year, the event wasn't held last year due to COVID, or it had to be held differently. Are you excited to be bringing it back?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's like everybody. We had to pivot last year because of COVID, and we ended up having, as a club, an alternative, Pintdemic, and it was an alternative to Brewfest, and it used passports to let folks sip beers at some of our local breweries and really support them, because they obviously through that time were having difficulties like everyone in this time. So it was a great alternative, but given the vaccination levels and everything else, we are offering it's a scaled down Brewfest this year, but it is definitely an outdoor and safe event that we're doing here in Juneau at the Subport. We're excited.
So, Ann, tell us how it's going to be set up this year.
Well, this year we're asking people that provide proof of vaccination to be admitted. So that's our sort of keeping everybody safe. Otherwise, you know, we're going to be outdoors under tents is the main difference. We have, correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, but 19 different brewers and distributors at the end of the day. And they'll be pouring a selection of draft and bottled beers to delight everyone. So it's the same Brewfest. We'll have food. We have two vendors providing food this year. Forno Rosa Pizzeria and Devil's Hideaway will be there for folks get hungry. And we will have music. And we would like people to come and enjoy themselves. It's an opportunity for people to get together in a safe way outside. And we're praying for a halfway good day.
But, you know, I just have this feeling that even if it's kind of wet, that people will adapt. Like you're adapting to offer this. But I understand that tickets are more limited this year. How many are available for people to purchase?
Yeah, it's 500.
Go ahead, Andy.
Not a problem. Yeah, 500. 100 of those are VIP, 400 attendees. One more mitigation measure that is actually pretty key is we're going to do compostable, disposable, single-use cups. And those really are, when you're not doing that high contact transfer all the time, it really is going to be just one more COVID mitigation measure, one more enhancement to the safety of the event.
Compostable glasses. So what will they look like? You have any idea? And how will that go along with the beer drinking experience?
It's going to be 3-ounce glasses, and Judo Compost is going to be helping us out with collecting those, putting them back into good use so we're not filling up the landfill with those. And it's going to work like it has in past years. You go up, and in this case, rather than handing a glass, you'll ask for a pour, and they'll hand it to you.
Well, that sounds like fun. So tell us about some of the beers this year. What's on tap that people might be interested in trying?
Go for it, Andy.
I have not seen the list. So
it's secret even to the committee. We actually are building that beer list for tomorrow, but I can go down. So we have a couple cider companies, Alaska Cider Works, Double Shovel. We have Two Seasons Meadery, which I'm pretty excited about. We, of course, have our local favorites here with Barnaby, Devil's Club, Forbidden Peak, and Alaskan Brewing, which has been amazing for all the years we've been doing it. We have Harbor Mountain coming. We have Denali Brewing coming, Bear Paw River coming. K&L Distributors, of course, is going to pour for a number of different folks. King Street, Midnight Sun, and also Valdez is a new entry into the market, at least for us, and it'll be exciting to try that.
So it's got a real Alaska flavor to it, to have a kind of a bad pun there. The Rotary Club does so many projects in the community, so much community service. I understand that your proceeds from this are really important to help you carry out those projects.
Yes, absolutely. This is one of it's becoming our biggest fundraiser. We in the past have had charity partners that participated with us. This year, we are the charity partner because we haven't held it for 2 years now. Well, yeah, a year. Anyway, we have a number of ongoing things that we fund in Juneau. One of the things we're working on right now is relocating the totem pole from Centennial Hall we're helping to fund that to a more protected area. We help out with glory hole lunches. Rotary, many people don't understand how robust and amazing Rotary's youth exchange program is. And that's a bit on hiatus right now, but that's something that we fully participate in. So it's just sort of runs the gamut of scholarships. We have a UIS scholarship that we've endowed at this point. We help out where we can, which is the point of Rotary, which is to do community projects to better people's lives, using your vocation as putting your vocation to service of the community.
Well, it is one of those things that they call a fundraiser. We'll take the D out of there because people will have fun raising this money. What do you hope will happen this year? Since it's a little bit different, but what do you expect to see?
You want to take a shot at that, Andy?
I
hope to see a lot of people who are relieved to get together in person in a safe way. I mean, every situation like that in Juneau, I've been participating in the open air markets. And on the food fest, it was raining sideways and 800 people showed up in the rain. So, we're pretty confident that we'll sell it out. So get your tickets early. but I think it'll be a relaxed, good time for people to get together in a safe way and enjoy a lot of good beer at the same time.
Exactly. We just wanted to offer this event again for folks, to safely come out and enjoy this and support the breweries. and support our local charity fundraising efforts. And I think we will have a very successful event if the weather cooperates, which we always appreciate.
Weather permitting, but we find that things in Juneau succeed no matter what the weather does, because people are generous and good, and that's always comforting. So before we go, you want to recap some of the key details for people to remember?
Okay. Yep. So we're selling out those tickets fast. It will be a lot of great breweries, some we haven't had before. If you want to buy tickets, it's on capbrewfest.com. And do keep in mind that this is an outdoor event, so bring those boots and jackets just in case. We will have plenty of covered areas. But again, your vaccination card or a picture of that vaccination card, something that our volunteers can easily validate that information. That's just going to make everyone who's at the event understand, with all the COVID mitigation measures, we're having a fun and safe event.
And that's something that I think people will look forward to as they head into a season of cabin fever. So one last hurrah. Thank you so much for joining us, Anne Metcalf and Andy Mills. Appreciate it. Good luck with the fun.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Well, we were just talking about the Capital Brewfest fundraiser. Well, another popular fundraiser is back again, the Battle of the Burger. The team captains from the Thunder Mountain Swim Team will join us next. Well, now we go from brews to burgers. Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. We all know there's nothing, nothing like a good burger to sink your teeth into. And the Thunder Mountain Swim Team has found a way to tap into that to raise money so that they can travel to different competitions in the region. So their Battle of the Burger is back after a COVID hiatus last year. And like Brewfest, it's been slightly modified due to COVID, but all the essentials that you love are there. And joining us, we have the three swim team captains from the Thunder Mountain team, Jamie Heidersdorf, Nancy Little, and Karthik Saguni. So we'll get to the Battle of the Burgers in just a moment. But what I was hoping is that each of you would tell us, you know, what your competitive stroke is and why do you decide to compete with that stroke. And we'll start off with Jamie Heidersdorf.
Hi, yeah. So my favorite competitive stroke is breaststroke, and I like to swim it because there are a lot of fast breaststrokers in Alaska, and it's really fun to compete against them. Yeah.
I'm Nancy Little, and the strokes that I do is long distance freestyle and sprint butterfly, and I enjoy swimming the long distance freestyle because of all the power I can get extended over a long period of time.
I'm Karthik, and I swim the 100 breaststroke and 50 free. I'm mainly a sprinter just because I don't like distance. Sprinting's fun.
So tell us a little bit about what benefits you get from swimming. Obviously, if you're swimming those in competitions, you're going to be in good physical shape. But maybe tell us about how, and we'll start with Jamie. We'll go around again. What do you find happening after being part of this swim team?
Yeah, I think that ever since I joined the swim team, I've made a lot of new friends, and it's like a super fun and like positive atmosphere. And so I think it's just it's like almost relaxing in a way. Like I always look forward to practice as a way to like relieve stress from my day. And so it's like, yeah, I don't know. I always look forward to it, and it's just fun.
Obviously, swimming teaches you lifelong lessons of staying healthy and staying fit, but it also teaches you how to be part of a team, how to work with a team, and how to make friends, and how to work hard towards the things that you want.
I think swimming's really benefited me by turning me into more of a morning person. Well, with having practice at 5 a.m. every morning. That's pretty helpful.
Oh, my goodness. 5 a.m. So it turns you into a pretty disciplined person if you have to get there for practice. So, Jamie, how many team members are typically in a team that you have to work with?
There's usually about 25 every year, 25 to 30.
Nancy, how do you support each other? How do you work together?
Well, we push each other at practices and we cheer for each other at races. That's the main thing. We're all a very supportive community.
How about you, Karthik? How do you coach your team and lead them on?
It's like my coach says, we're kind of like a tight-knit little family and everything gets along smoother when everyone gets along with each other. We have a lot of team bonding events and we all get pretty close during the season.
Well, I imagine this Battle of the Burger is a huge bonding event because you have to cook all these burgers up. But in COVID, there were more burgers available and there was a competition between which was the best burger. How is it going to be handled post the onset of COVID?
Yeah, for sure. So usually in past years, it's been more of like a social event with the community and everything, and like tons of people would come from the community and there would be a huge turnout and like you just get to go around sampling each burger. But this year with the change of COVID and everything, we're gonna have it be more you're still gonna have like it's just gonna be less like human contact, and so it's just to prevent the spread of COVID. And so instead of this year walking around and sampling the burgers that you'd like to choose, there's going to be four set burgers, so four different samples for your four fourths. And so you're going to get a little sample plate of each burger. And so it's going to be more of like to-go style. And so you'll get to take that with you. So it's just a little different this year, but it will still be. You still get to choose and like vote on your favorite burger and all that. So, yeah.
So what are the burgers? Anyone want to take a stab at that?
There's could be a surprise. There may be some, maybe like a Mexican style burger I've heard. Maybe like a barbecue burger I've also heard. But the other ones can stay a surprise.
But one thing won't be a surprise. It'll be good, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So how does this work? How do I get my burger?
So the Battle of the Burger is this Saturday, September 25th at 12 o'clock. And it's at the Riverbend covered area. And so pretty much you show up, and if you haven't already purchased your ticket, you can buy a ticket, which is $10 each. And the ticket will get you four-fourths of each different team's burger, and then you can try out your burgers, and then you will get to put in your little slip of your, like, decision on whose burger you think is the best.
So is there a way to get there early, or should you get there early, because do your burgers run out pretty quickly?
Yeah, usually it's a pretty big turnout, and so the earlier the better, I would say. Get there as soon as possible.
So what's your goal for fundraising this year?
Mainly the goal is just to like see everyone from the community, have as many people as possible come support the swim and dive team.
Okay, so you don't have a set dollar amount. The sky is the limit then, hopefully. So... yeah. Tell us a little bit about what you use this money for.
The fees help us families send their swimmers to go travel the meets and housing situations, as well as pay for pool time.
So I'm curious, what are the travel opportunities like? What do they allow you to do that you might not be able to do otherwise, aside from competing? Karthik?
When we travel, we always get to group house together, And when we are housing out, it's usually with the other teams or they're pretty nearby. So we get to see what they're like in and out of the water. So we also get tighter knit as a like Southeast region and a community.
So I have to ask this because this summer we were all watching the Olympics. Were your eyes glued to the Olympics this summer?
Yeah, for sure. I think that all the swimmers, and not even just swimmers, the athletes out Alaska were watching Lydia and her swims. And it was really cool because we knew she was training for the trials. And so it was cool to watch her swim at the trials and then see her make it to the Olympics and then win gold. Really
so that's cool. Lydia Jacoby from Seward, who won the gold for the 100-meter breaststroke. So did you actually see her win at that moment?
Yeah, I remember being at work and we were all like huddled around a little computer watching it live and we were all super excited, getting super pumped. And to see her actually win the gold, like all of us were in the moment like, oh my gosh, we couldn't believe it happened.
So do any of you know Lydia personally? Have you come across her at your meets?
A couple of years ago, I went to a swim camp where Team Alaska all competed and she was on that team, as was I. And for a week, we all like, I would say, swam together and competed together. And it was a cool experience to look back on.
I know. Isn't that amazing to realize that you were swimming with an Olympic champion? That is amazing. Does it give you inspiration to know that someone from a small community in Alaska can win the gold? And especially, you know, other communities like in California have pools everywhere. There's more opportunity to swim. It's got to be inspiring.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, I mean, it's not very often that you see somebody, especially from Alaska and a small town like Seward, like go to the Olympics and especially win gold. So I think it's super inspiring for anybody and not just like young swimmers, but yeah.
Well, in case our listeners just joined us, will you recap what we need to know to help you out with your fundraiser and get our burgers?
Yeah, so pretty much this Saturday at September 25th at 12 o'clock at the Riverbend covered area is the Battle of the Burgers. And tickets are $10. They'll get you 4/4 to sample 4 different kinds of burgers. And you pretty much get a vote on your favorite burger. And all profits are going to the Thunder Mountain Swim and Dive team. And we'd love the support from the community. And you get to come and try lots of delicious burgers. And we hope you come and join us this Saturday.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm hungry already hearing about it. And I want to know what the surprise burgers will be. So thanks so much for joining us, for being here on Juno Afternoon. And pardon the pun, I hope that your Battle of the Burger makes a big splash. Thank you. Tomorrow, Shelley Delaney will host Juno Afternoon, and here are some of the conversations she'll be bringing to you. Bartlett Hospital has efforts to get patients and families engaged in the healing process. How you can help the needy, and one hint, it involves a pair of tennis shoes, the latest on St. Vincent de Paul's Walk and Run fundraiser. And even as the leaves cling to the trees, recruitment for the Juno Nordic Ski Team is underway. And that will do it for Juno Afternoon. Thank you for joining us, and have a great evening.